When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi Voice app calling, Office 365, and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Rechard van den Berg.
This is Talk Central, episode 260 for the week starting 19 May 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. Join our YouTube live stream on Sundays at 1 p.m.
On Talk Central this week, MTN backs down.
Also on the show this week, Trump's war on Huawei.
Plus, Nusbash told it can't buy We Buy Cars and WhatsApp's hack.
It's Sunday afternoon. We're live streaming on the Tube and it's time to talk everything tech.
Well, how's it, Rehat? How are you doing?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. So we are indeed live on YouTube, and this is going to be the last time, I hope, that we'll be doing it using Google Hangouts on Air, because there's some big changes coming to this podcast in the coming weeks. We are going to be live streaming via OBS Studio soon. Regular listeners to the show will notice, or viewers of the show rather, not listeners, will notice a quite a dramatic change to my background scenery. Very green. That's because I have a beautiful green screen installed, and we'll be making good use of that once OES is up and running, hopefully in our next show. Although I must caution that I've been spending a lot of time in OBS over the last couple of weeks, and it is not the world's easiest software to learn. But the more I delve into it, the more I realize just how powerful it is. I think it's perhaps fair, Rehat, to call it the Photoshop of live streaming.
Yeah, a little bit more complex than that. I would say the Photoshop version 1 of live streaming.
it's not easy to learn, but very, very powerful software, and looking forward to putting this green screen behind me to exceptional use in the coming weeks. The quality of this podcast or the YouTube videos will also be improving. Hangouts on Air is limited to a 720p resolution. We'll be bumping that up when we go to OBS to 1080p. I thought we probably a good idea, although we can do it, Rehat, probably a good idea to skip 4K at this stage. Putting our ugly mugs on YouTube in 4K may break the internet.
Yeah, please, let's not go there.
But we'll be hopefully this time next Sunday. Join us at 1 o'clock. We go live on YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Just search Tech Central. That's one word, Tech Central, in YouTube, and hit that subscribe button. And if you hit the bell, you'll get alerted whenever we go live on a Sunday afternoon. And I see we have some viewers joining us already in the live stream. So welcome, everybody. We are going to be discontinuing our audio live stream on Spreaker, which was available on live.techcentral.co.za. And we'll be streaming exclusively through YouTube for now, though we may look at doing Facebook Live and possibly even Twitch at some point, assuming the OBS allows you to do that sort of integration, which I think it does. It does, right?
I say, do them all, Duncan. Do them all.
Do them all. Never live streamed to Facebook before, but I believe it is a very popular platform for this sort of thing. But we're going to start with YouTube. We're going to get OBS right. We're going to do a lot of fiddling in OBS. We're going to get this green screen working beautifully. What I like about it is the ability to, when we're talking about something, we can throw up a product shot on screen, or we can visit a website, and make this a lot more interactive. And of course, join us on Sundays as well, and join us in the chat room. We'd love to get your comments during the course of the live show. And of course, the podcast will always be available in audio format as well, if that's your preferred means of consumption. It'll be available through our usual channels, iono.fm, or through your favorite podcatcher. But yeah, some exciting stuff planned for this podcast in the coming weeks. So hope you'll be able to join us on Sunday afternoons at 1 p.m. But let's get on with the show, shall we?
Yeah, the quiz, I think. Let's not forget about that again.
Thank you for reminding me. I hadn't forgotten this week, but Thanks for the reminder. Just to do you want to do the first question?
Yeah, sure. The first question. MTN listed on the Nigerian Stock Exchange this past week, and its shares rose by the maximum allowable amount on its first 2 days as a public company in Lagos. How much was that per day?
And the Competition Commission has recommended that the plan by Naspash to buy online car wholesaler WeBuyCars be blocked. How much has Naspash offered to pay for 60% of this company?
Third question. Lenovo showed off something quite unusual in the world of PCs this week. What was it?
Very interesting. And Hewlett-Packard Enterprise said this week it was buying which legendary maker of supercomputers?
And the final question. Tesla CEO Elon Musk warned this week that the company will run out of money
unless hardcore changes are made, yeah. We'll get to the answers to the quiz, of course, always at the end of the show. But right now, let's get into this week's news. And interesting development by MTN this week. I don't know if you saw it, Raf, but about a week ago, they announced that they were introducing this this data rollover service, which is effectively a continuation of out of bundle. They would continue to roll over your data at a preset price, at a megabyte at a time. I think one of the rates I saw quoted was 40 cents, but I think it's based on what your in-bundle rate is. The contentious thing about this was that MTN said that this is going to be opt-out for all of its customers. So effectively continuing with out-of-bundle charges, which certainly at face value seems to go directly against the spirit, if not the actual, the requirements of the end user service charter, what's it called? The EUSCC, the data expiry regulation rules that ICASA came up with and which were implemented a couple of months ago. Huge backlash from social media users, from MTN customers. And just a week later, they announced that they are scrapping it. They are no longer going to implement this this out of bundle option. In fact, they're not even going to make it opt in. They're just going to scrap it based on the feedback they've received from their customers. So interesting move. And I wonder to what extent they also potentially came under regulatory pressure behind the scenes for doing this. But certainly at face value, it looked like they were, you know, it looks like this company was, and probably still is, addicted to out of bundle data. Now, those ICASA regulations were very much and very clearly in the consumer interest. And, I think that, I don't know, Rahat, I don't know what your views on this are, but I think they were trying to pull a fast one, really, and they got caught out.
Yeah, I'm just actually looking at my phone now, trying to find the text that I also received. And I had to give it like two or three looks, what's going on here? How can they still be doing stuff like that in 2019, after everything we've been through? You know, it's kind of, I don't know, is it somebody's just making a mistake, or is it just devious practice? I mean, either way, it doesn't really, the answer isn't really what we want to hear, right? They're not really looking after their customers.
We know they're going to lose a lot of money from this, or they are losing a lot of money from not having automatic out of bundle anymore, which was really an awful thing. I mean, you know, at least it's better now because the price is the same as it was in bundle, I think. Whereas in the past, if you went out of bundle, and it happened to so many people, it happened to me many times, even though I'm a tech-savvy user who understands these things, on the previous network I was with, my current network doesn't do it at all, which is kudos to them. But on my previous network, I racked up huge out-of-bundle fees from time to time just because I wasn't getting notified timeously that I'd gone out of bundle. And secondly, you don't realize, oh, oops, I forgot some data intensive application on my laptop. I'm tethered. It's downloading stuff in the background or a Windows update or something. And you get caught out. And I think it was right for ICASA to intervene because these guys were ripping off customers. And what MTN did here or tried to do here, I think, while not perhaps not as evil as those old rules, was certainly an attempt to claw back some of that out-of-bundle revenue that they have lost through these ICASA regulations. And I think the backlash was right. And I suppose some kudos to them for listening to their customers and backing down.
But it's not the first time their customers have been complaining about things, right? I mean, even with other operators, that we know these guys don't operate in silos. Everybody knows what's happening in the industry. So if Cell C does something that everybody complains about, then everybody knows about it. So again, doing something like this, didn't somebody ask the question, what are people going to think? What are our customers going to think?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm starting to sound like my parents here, but I'm getting to the point where it's a little bit sickening to think that those kind of questions aren't being asked at the top level before they introduce things like this.
Yeah.
Again, it's 2019. We've been through a lot of regulations. We've been through a lot of issues. These operators know what customers want. It's very simple. Give us data that doesn't expire. We'll gladly pay for the data.
Yeah.
Or voice calls, but don't come in with these devious methods to try and snake more money out of us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I speak to my domestic workers regularly, and if I look at the practices, just a lot of the things on their cell phones, I had to help just get rid of a lot of these automatic bundles that could come off, you know, audio caller tunes. I mean, these things cost R3 to R5 a day. I mean, it's ridiculous. How can a company let that happen if they know their customers are going to be ripped off by this? Probably the people that, you know, for R3 a day is a lot of airtime. Rant. I'm getting really, really irritated by this. I mean, because they should be asking these questions.
You're absolutely right. It's ridiculous. And I've seen the same thing. You phone people who, you know, don't have a lot of money, and you hear these customized ringtones when you call them, and there's a message on the thing saying press whatever on your phone to get this customized ringtone at R2 a day. This is taking money from people who have almost nothing. They've been suckered into this somehow, probably unlawfully. And the operators, of course, are making huge money out of this. But it's, I tend to agree, something has to be done about it. It's, I think the regulator was right to step in on the data expiry thing, and perhaps they need to do even more because, like these automated ringtones that people subscribe to and don't know how to get out of, and these charges that come off their accounts, even if they're not using data or making phone calls. I don't know. It almost seems there needs to be some rules around this.
Mm. More. You know, but I'm starting to look again at the employees who's not, you know, if I see somebody working at MTN in a higher up, let's say, development role where they make decisions based on these products, if I meet somebody like that and I ask them that question and they don't have a really good answer for me, you know, it doesn't bode well for the people that work there either.
Mm.
Surely the process, again, you know, what's best. I work with a lot of corporates, and every now and then somebody makes a suggestion that is not really in the best interest of the customer, and somebody has to highlight that, you know, and it's not a negative thing. Everybody says, okay, yeah, maybe you're right. Let's maybe spitball a bit more around that. I mean, that's how it should be, not just, okay, what could make the most money for my business, which is not good for the customer.
Yeah, but they've gotten so used to these revenues that, they don't want to give them up. But the funny thing is, if they were, I think if they were more consumer friendly, that actually, you know, they'd get less churn and they'd get more loyal customers, which would be good for business at the end of the day. The situation you have now is you end up with customers who are just unhappy. And I'm sure customers on prepaid say, well, why is this money disappearing off my account? Let me switch to another network. It's not going to rip me off this way. And if this wasn't happening, then the customers would probably be more loyal. And as someone in the comments section has just pointed out, it's not just the operators that are doing this, but it's the so-called WASPs, the wireless application service providers that run on top of these networks. And I know there's an industry organization called WASPA that tries to deal with this sort of stuff, but it does at times seem like the whole thing is a bit out of control.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly the same problem. You know, it's like a land grab out there. And the result is customers or the people on the ground using these services get 2 or 3 SIM cards, or they just stop using a SIM card altogether.
Mm.
That thing gets recycled. I pick it up, and I'm sitting with a burden of 100 SMS. So the system is just, you know, everything has got repercussions on everything else. And it starts with just being a bit money hungry.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for that. I think that, like you said, you know, people will certainly be using a lot more data. I would be spending a lot more money on data if I knew that my R50 of data today will be good for as long as what I'm going to use, unless it runs out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I have to think twice, okay, so this data, if I buy extra data onto my SIM card, mm-hmm. is it going to expire? You know, how much do I need now? You know, it's even me as a tech, you find it tricky sometimes.
Yeah.
And again, I think Afrios is doing quite well with the app because it's pretty clear in there what is and what isn't, you know, data that's going to run out. I can't say the same for MTN's own app, which is very confusing. That I've often bought two or three airtime bundles because it doesn't clearly, it looks like you've got airtime, but you don't, or you have airtime, but it indicates that you don't, but your bundled airtime has run out and you can, I don't know, it's very confusing. Definitely worth looking more into that once I have the energy to kind of take it on. But yeah.
In the chat room, Bradley Reynolds says WASP services that target lower LSMs should be made illegal. It's an interesting discussion. I don't know if you can make them illegal for a certain income group, because then there'll be allegations of you prejudicing a certain income group.
But isn't the practice in itself is, I mean, there's nothing really credible about, can you really tell me that somebody really wants a ringtone at R3 a day?
No.
Nobody wants it. I can guarantee you that. So the practice in itself, I mean, there might be good uses for some of those services, but those things that are purely out there to do people out of their money, that should be done away with. I mean, I don't know if there's such a service, but let's say, for example, there's a service that allows you to get lottery results for R3 a day. I mean, that, again, it's robbery, daylight robbery, because that information is freely available. Nobody should be paying for such a service. And people that might not know better would fall for this. So, you know, those are the people we need to protect.
Yeah, I've got no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind that the vast majority of these services are people who are signing up for them, not realizing what they're doing, or, you know, being signed up for them without their consent. Because I can't imagine that, you're right, Richard, I can't imagine that someone is going to willingly sign up for a ringtone at R3 a day. Mm. Why?
It doesn't make sense. And whoever signs, I mean, again, those processes, nobody along the chain of command there goes, guys, is this really honorable what we're doing? Mm. It's just about the bottom line for a lot of companies. And, it's the big operators that should be kind of, they're the only guys that really can see what's happening from the inside. For everybody else, you know, we kind of hear it via the grapevine, or, you know, if we know somebody close to us who has experienced this. But otherwise, you would never know about these things. It'll just be kind of people moaning about it among their friends, and they don't know what to do about it.
Yes. But yeah, thanks for your comment, Bradley. I don't know what the solution is. I think it'd be difficult to ban these services specifically for a certain income group. But, you know, maybe there's an argument they get banned altogether. But, you know, maybe there's, you know, can you do that either? I think what has to happen is the operators need to clean up. There's too much abuse that's gone on over the years. And I think there is an industry body in WASPA that's, I think has done some good work, but, it's clear that consumers are still being ripped off on this stuff.
Mm. Yeah. We need to, you know, if it was just one thing in isolation, we could say, okay, you know, it's a problem, growth, we can kind of accept this and let's fix it and move on. But the operators don't have a very good track record with customer interest. Yes, they provide fantastic services, and we certainly can't live without those services. But at what expense, you know? I mean, we can afford the money we throw at our cell phone for the most part. A lot of people can't. For a lot of people, airtime is a very important commodity, you know?
Yeah.
Give me some airtime is more important than give me a R5, you know, to use towards something.
And you're buying it in limited quantities if you're in that segment. And, you know, you might spend R5 or R10 on data, on airtime, and to have that eaten away, especially without your knowledge.
There's nothing good about it. Nothing good about it. I mean, you can also argue maybe it should be a 20 cent, 30 cent, 50 cent service, not a R3, R4, R5 service. You know, there's exploitation to a very big degree if you look at the numbers people, the amount of money people could make off these dodgy services.
Yeah.
It's not good. I mean, even we have trouble, you know, kind of understanding how deep these things go. I can't imagine if you subscribe to all these things and you don't know what to do about it. Again, you ditch your SIM card and you get another one. I think that's what a lot of people do.
Yeah, for sure. That's exactly what happens. And as I said earlier, the customers will be more loyal if this wasn't going on. I'm convinced of it. Anyway, coming back to the MTN data rollover plan, Roy says in the chat room, if anyone understood MTN's original data rollover plan they communicated after one read, they are cleverer than I. Yeah, I mean, I've read through a few of these contracts and clauses and stuff. I have to do it sometimes as part of my job as a technology journalist, and reading through the operator's terms and conditions is enough to give you a headache. But of course, they're written by lawyers, and they're not written with the end user in mind. Those contracts and those documents are there to protect the operator, not to protect you, the end customer.
Yeah, the customer will always lose if we don't have somebody fighting for us. You know, it's sad. We shouldn't have to fight with something we love so much. I mean, I love myself and I love being connected. I love, you know, having that capability in the palm of my hand. Yep. But then underneath that, there's this layer of just, you know, kind of not, you know, business practices that's not geared for the best interest of the country, really.
Yeah. So let's move along. Let's have a chat about Donald Trump. Why not?
Going from bad to worse, or I don't know.
He's got it in for Huawei, doesn't he? He always got it in for China, but Huawei seems to be the company that he is having a particular go at. Now, Huawei is obviously the technology champion of China. It's their biggest tech company. Incredibly successful company, overtaken Apple as the second biggest smartphone maker in the world, and is on track possibly later this year to overtake Samsung Electronics of Korea as the world's biggest smartphone maker. But that's not only the only thing they do. They provide a wide range of consumer electronics gadgets, but they also help build telecommunications infrastructure for operators around the world, 3G, 4G. And they're very well positioned, exceptionally well positioned, to be a leader in the supply of 5G telecommunications network equipment. And this seems to have the U.S. very concerned. Now, the allegations that you hear repeatedly from U.S. politicians, including Trump, is that this is going to be a threat. This poses a potential threat to national security. And of course, the U.S. is putting pressure on its allies in Europe and elsewhere to not work with Huawei and not to deploy Huawei's telecommunications gear in their 5G networks. And we've seen a few countries already going along with this, I think including Australia and possibly New Zealand, if I remember correctly. And certainly there's been a lot of pressure on European governments as well, although so far, some European governments are saying that they're going to put in fairly tough rules in terms of vetting the security of Huawei equipment. The sort of general view so far appears to be that they will continue to use Huawei equipment. But it's an interesting, it's a really interesting geopolitical story. I think it is the big story of our generation, or certainly of this decade, is this contestation for global dominance between America and China. And China is on the ascendancy, how can you remember what the right word is there? And America seems to be, Trump seems to be playing an interesting game that isn't necessarily based on fact. Is Huawei really a proxy for the Chinese government and a backdoor for spying on countries around the world? I find it very hard to believe.
Yeah, I mean, a technology company in today's day and age, I think it'll be very hard for them to do. But having said that, you know, I'm always open-minded when it comes to technology, and I'm very much a skeptical person in terms of, you know, anything is possible with, you know, I guess, the right amount of planning. But again, you can't get away with something like this today. If something is found in one piece of equipment, no matter what it is, maybe it's a one-off piece of equipment, but it's got branded Huawei and that is discovered to be spy tech. I mean, that'll be devastating for the company, right?
Yeah.
It'll probably lose more money. That money that it loses for the company will probably be more devastating than anything else for the country, I guess.
They'll be found.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, once these allegations start, there's no doubt computer hackers and backrooms trying to prove these claims, because if they find backdoors, it'll be to their benefit as well, right?
Yeah.
Because then they would be able to exploit it for their own reasons. And, you know, not that if we haven't heard anything, doesn't mean it hasn't happened, but, you know, I'm sure we would have heard something by now, at least some bit of information from somebody that says, yeah, we've got some equipment that is actually Huawei equipment that has got this malicious hardware or software in it.
So, I mean, the effect of all of this is that Huawei is effectively banned in the US. And I was reading an interesting article. I think it was on, Ars Technica or on The Verge a bit earlier today, from one of their journalists lamenting the fact that Chinese smartphone brands generally are just not available in America. You can't get a Huawei phone on a from any of the major operators in the US. And this journalist was lamenting this fact. He said around the world, Huawei is competing very hard. We know this. I mean, we see it here in the South African market. They're bringing great products to market. They're keeping Samsung on their toes, and they're giving Apple a serious run for its money. But in the US, this journalist pointed out, you have a duopoly in effect. You go to a major carrier, and what you can buy from them is either an Apple or a Samsung Galaxy. And with Huawei not as the third major challenger globally, not in the American market, Americans are actually losing out in that they just don't have much choice. You know, if either they go Android, they go Samsung, or they go Apple. So in many respects, in markets like South Africa and other markets around the world where Huawei is an active player, we actually have much better choice.
Yeah, we're in a much better position. I just want to add something with what you were saying earlier. I also read something on Reuters where Huawei says it's actually been preparing for a long time, I guess unexpectedly so, that should it be banned somewhere, it'll be able to get its own, you know, it started already producing its own silicon chip. So Yeah, gearing up to be a completely independent company, not rely on anybody else, which is probably a bigger threat if it is a threat, right? If the company is a threat and it's doing all of its own things and it's better at it than everybody else, we should be really worried. But
The irony of this, Rechard, sorry to interrupt, the irony of this is that it's actually making Huawei be more innovative and lessen its reliance on American suppliers. Because they know, they saw what happened to ZTE when Trump went after ZTE. The company was basically crippled. If Trump hadn't reversed that decision on ZTE to not supply it with components, like components from Qualcomm and the Android operating system and that sort of thing, ZTE would have gone bust. And Huawei will have looked at this very carefully. They'll see this posturing by the Americans. And they'll be saying, you know, we need to make sure we're independent. So they're going to develop their own chipsets. They're going to develop their own, you know, everything in those devices, everything they do, they're going to make sure that they've got their own. And ultimately, that actually is going to strengthen the company and strengthen the Chinese.
Especially because the company is based at the source, right? No, none of the American companies, I mean, yes, they have manufacturing plants and offices and things, but none of them are as close to their own manufacturing capabilities than a company like Huawei would be. Yeah. I mean, that's their own country, right? I mean, they're embedded there in some ways. Apple and the US's walled garden is kind of seemingly becoming similar thing, right? Kind of closing themselves in from the world for some reason. And the rest of the world, you know, I'm talking about tech now and Apple, you know, becoming more of an expensive product too. People around the world are going, hang on, guys, you know, we have really good alternatives now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've known a lot of people that it's not too phased about the American company.
I think the biggest potential threat to Huawei is if they can't get access to Android anymore. That's, I think, you know, they are apparently working on their own operating system, their own alternative to Android to run on their smartphones. But Android is such a well-developed ecosystem, you can't just forklift it out and put your own operating system in there, not without significant work. And I'm not sure you'd be able to get interoperability with the Play Store. So if the Americans really decided to play hardball and say, you know, you can't have access to our suppliers, and they lost access to Android, I think that would do them huge damage.
Yeah, that could be devastating. But how likely do you think something like that would happen? Do you think Google would bow down to anything like that from a government?
Google, I don't know. I mean, they're an American company. If the U.S. government said you may not supply technology to this Chinese company, they probably don't have a choice.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, wasn't Google also for a long time against helping China with, kind of spying on their citizens? And now they've got specific versions of Google search just for China. I spent that on a correction.
I don't think so. I don't think they ever went to
Isn't there a standalone Google search engine that only that gives proof search results?
They were talking about doing it, but there was a huge backlash from Google employees, and I think it kind of went away. And so Google isn't in China.
Okay. Then I must have, then I thought about something else. But yeah, it's, look, I wouldn't see a future in which Google would do something like that.
They wouldn't do it. Huawei is so important to Google and to Android. This is the second biggest Android manufacturer in the world. There's no way they want to pull the plug on Huawei. And there's every chance that this is going to be the biggest Android manufacturer in the world soon. It would be very much against Google's interest to say, well, Huawei, sorry, you can't have our software. But again, the Trump administration, you actually don't know what they're going to do. I would never have expected them to get as hardcore as they already have on this issue. And it's clear that America sees China as a threat, and they're using tariffs, they're using all sorts of threats, they're using. I mean, we don't know where this is going to end. The U.S. wants a new Cold War with China.
Just for the click, it's all clickbait, Duncan.
All out of Trump's clickbait Twitter feed.
It does feel like we're living in a movie sometimes, in a kind of badly scripted scene somewhere. But I think history has repeated itself many times, and it's kind of just, people, and then I'm breaking this down, I'm simplifying this a lot, but, new people coming to power, they're trying to make a point, they're trying to change things, ruffle feathers up, maybe they do, maybe they don't. Next person comes in, the same thing happens. Maybe they've got a better relationship with the foreign power. I think we'll always have that. We just are close to the brink of actual, serious cold warfare, are we? And in the technology age, it's probably a lot more difficult to distinguish that, because there's no, we got planes dropping bombs all the time, but we don't really have that idea of, war is actually happening now. Yeah. War is happening all the time within the digital space. And I think that is probably the most concerning angle for me, because we won't know something's bad has happened until it's too late.
Roy in the chat room makes a very good point. He says Google doesn't sell Android. It's open source, a big loophole. I hadn't thought of that, of course. You can get access to Android. You don't have to have Google's permission. Of course, Google sells its own, I'm not sure what they call it, set of applications that run inside Android, which the vast majority of Android users are going to want to have, things like Google Maps and the Play Store and YouTube and all these other services that they make available, I think on a non-open source basis, on top of the Android operating system. But Roy, you do make a good point about Android. So I suppose Huawei could take Android and use it as a basis for developing their own OS. But again, to what extent they'd be able to get access to, if the US decided to play hardball, whether they'd be able to get access to services like the whole suite of Google apps is open to question. But it's an interesting discussion to have, and it's a good point, so thanks for making it. Yeah, we'll be watching US versus China, I think, with a great deal of interest, not just this year, but for the rest of this decade, I think. Actually, this decade's almost over. Well into next decade.
That's a scary thought, eh? Wow.
It was a scary thought. I was thinking, this decade is over. Can you believe it's almost 2020? It feels like the year 2000 was just the other day.
We were reminiscing about the program Beyond 2000, where that was the future. And now we are beyond 2000, nearly 2020.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about cyber warfare. I mean, it's it's real. I think because it's crept up over such a long period of time, you just don't always feel like it's here.
2001, A Space Odyssey. Was it Arthur C. Clarke? That looked so far in the future at one point, and now it's, 18 years ago.
Oh, my word. Don't go, let's not go there.
Right. What else do we need to talk about this week? Interesting move by the Competition Commission. They said they're going to recommend to the Competition Tribunal that NASPAT not be allowed to buy We Buy Cars. I didn't really know about We Buy Cars until quite recently. They had a very aggressive advertising campaign, and I see they've got a huge warehouse, I think in Centurion, on the way between Johannesburg and Pretoria. It seems to be a very big operation, a lot of it driven online. Now, NASPAT offered 1.4 billion rand to buy We Buy Cars, or 60% of We Buy Cars. And the Competition Commission taking issue with this, saying that, I'm going to paraphrase here, but saying that NASPAT owns another company called the Frontier Car Group. I'm not sure where that operates, apparently not in South Africa. The NASPAT had been planning to, in fact, launch Frontier Car Group in South Africa, and this would have been a competitor to We Buy Cars. And so they therefore recommended to the commission, or to the tribunal rather, that the deal not be allowed to go ahead because it would result in a diminishing of competition in this particular segment. I've never used a We Buy Cars services. Have you, Rachat?
No, I haven't, but I'm surprised at how many car buying services there are. I mean, just listening to radio ads alone and seeing the billboards.
Oh, there are a lot of
huge industry. Yeah, there's definitely a handful of companies that all offer to buy and sell cars. Offering the best price. I mean, it's obviously still a huge market in South Africa.
Yeah.
But I guess it makes sense for a company who wants to launch something to just buy an audience they've got already and a platform that they can potentially replicate if they see a lot of value in maybe the back end systems and how it works. I don't know.
Yeah. But the recommendation that it be blocked. We'll see what the tribunal comes up with, but it's a big blow for NASPAT, and certainly a big deal. 1.4 billion rand is a big chunk change. Last story, Rachat, and you wanted to touch on this one. I actually did a podcast this week with Sophos to talk about this hack. So if you're if I can call it a hack, I'm not exactly sure what to call it. It's not a security
probably brief. Exploit. Probably exploit's probably a better
exploit. Thank you. That's a better word. But WhatsApp, a WhatsApp exploit was revealed this week. Apparently targeting, specifically used to target human rights activists, including one in the UK. Apparently this exploit was developed by an Israeli firm. And it's not entirely clear to me how the exploit got out into the wild. Apparently, this Israeli firm does work with nation-state governments to find exploits in this sort of software. But it raises some interesting questions about just how secure WhatsApp is, because we obviously hear about end-to-end encryption and companies like WhatsApp and apps like WhatsApp and Signal and others punt this end-to-end encryption, saying, you know, this is obviously very secure. But if there's these side exploits that can be taken advantage of, how sure can we really be that our communication isn't being monitored by someone else?
Again, this is the cyber warfare we were just talking about, right? It's happening. There's companies contracted just to find these exploits, which is pretty scary stuff, I think. But I mean, this was a pretty simple exploit if you think about it. They just use a data packet that is sent to a WhatsApp phone to initiate a voice call. To inject some malicious code. I mean, it seems like the most plausible thing in hindsight, right?
And you don't even have to answer the call.
Yeah, you don't even have to answer the call. It's just the data is transferred. It's obviously, you know, that's where the exploit came from. Facebook said it was a buffer overflow vulnerability in the VoIP stack that allowed remote execution via specifically crafted series of SRTCP packets sent to a target phone number. Obviously, it's been patched now, and they do list a few of the versions that is still vulnerable. So, I mean, if you have WhatsApp, it's definitely worth checking it out.
Updating it, definitely.
But, it does, you know, I just want to touch again on the cyber warfare thing. If there's companies are trying to find these vulnerabilities, how many are there that we don't know about that are being used in the world? I mean, and this used to be done by basement hackers who just were doing it for fun. Now we have companies out there just going for it. That's what they want to do. And then they're selling that access to the highest bidder or to a contracted individual party.
Yeah. Yeah, you can be sure that I think you just have to assume that these exploits are there in the software. And obviously companies like Facebook will patch them as soon as they become aware of them, or one hopes they would. But I think you have to assume that particularly nation state actors, but also hacker groups with malicious intent have access to these sort of things. You can be sure the NSA has a war chest of exploits that it uses on a regular basis. Law enforcement agencies around the world, I'm sure, share trade notes and have a toolkit of exploits that haven't been patched that they can use to sometimes obviously do good work in taking down criminals, but potentially also do work that we wouldn't like so much.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the scariest thing is always the fact that you know that there's hardware out there that somebody can deploy on the street corner, and they can pick up cell phone calls, and they can decrypt data, and they can find this grab. Yeah, I mean, that technology exists. It seems so far-fetched, but nothing is secure. So, you know, keep those naked pics of yourself to yourself. You know, there's no reason to photograph it. And if you're doing illegal activity also, no reason to do it, because somebody's going to be sniffing those packets for sure.
Yeah. It raises interesting questions, though, for human rights activists, for journalists and their sources. I think a lot of people just assume that, I happen to be chatting on Signal with a source who's giving me some very confidential information, and their name can't be compromised, for example. You kind of tend to trust this end-to-end encryption, but at the end of the day, I think the message is that it's not necessarily secure. It probably is, but it might not be.
Yeah, you just have to play the catch-up game and either be, be cleverer than the tech and use code words, I guess, or do the good old note passing and go to a public space where there's lots of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Well, that takes care of this week's news, Rachat. Let's move on to our regular features. Our winner and our loser this week are the same thing. I don't know if we've done that before, but our winner and loser this week is MTN. They are our loser for their decision to introduce this this new out-of-bundle package by the back door. Although, to their credit, after the uproar, they pulled the plug on it. But they're our loser this week for that. Now, they also are winner this week for a very successful listing in Nigeria on the Nigerian Stock Exchange in Lagos. Huge demand in that market for the shares, and they rose substantially, 10% on the first day of trading and 10% on the second day of trading, which is the maximum allowed under Nigerian Stock Exchange rules. So it looks like MTN is finally on the mend in Nigeria, and now as a listed entity there. Hopefully the policymakers and the regulators are going to perhaps pause before they go after the company like they have in the past. Of course, the MTN still needs to resolve its fight with the Auditor General. $2 billion claim being made by the Auditor General in alleged unpaid taxes, which MTN is fighting in court. But I think the general picture for MTN is an improving one in Nigeria. So well done, MTN. I think it's the first time we've ever picked the same company as our winner and our loser of the week.
First for everything, Duncan.
Absolutely. What's your pick this week?
So I've been playing with a nice little notebook. It's quite thin, as you can see. I don't know if you can see the angle, but this is the new Asus ZenBook.
Oh, yes. They were going to send that to me to have a look at, actually. It hasn't arrived yet. I think they sent it to you first.
Yeah, Duncan. It's not lovely. What you know. It's who you know, hey? But yeah, this, let me just show you. There. It's got an NVIDIA graphics card in there, which is pretty great. A very basic one. You can see some more stuff. But yeah, this is a pretty nice
machine.
Yeah, a little kind of go anywhere. It's actually the only notebook that I'm using at the moment that can fit into my camera bag, which is pretty interesting. But, all the normal things that you would expect from a notebook of this caliber, Windows 10, 16 gigs of RAM, 512 gigabyte SSD, and nice. Then that NVIDIA GeForce MX150, it's their mobile chip. I mean, it's you know, you're not going to be sporting, playing very high-end games with this thing. But I find it very useful for doing some basic video editing work, as there's enough kind of power there to do some very basic cuts if you need to, without too much high-end, you know, graphic special effects. And yeah, look, I really enjoyed using it. So going for about 25,000 Rand. So as a thin notebook, thin, small, 14-inch, ultra compact, it's certainly one of the better options I've seen. But as a big, bulky notebook user, it was a nice change to be able to go to something that's literally, you know, the size of an A4 page or a...
Very nice. How much does it weigh?
Under a kilogram.
Yeah, that's very Rechot, you disappeared. But yeah, no, it looks like a beautiful machine. It's what processor does it have in it? Oh, looks like Rechot has disappeared. Rechot, please rejoin the conversation, but I'm going to move on with my pick in the meantime. And that's fantastic. Sometimes you want to download a video off YouTube, right? And there's some tools that do this. And I was looking for one the other day and read the reviews and eventually actually paid for the advanced features in this one. That's an app called 4K Video Downloader. Now, it's available for Windows. I haven't checked if it's available on Mac. It probably is. But the app's called 4K Video Downloader, and I really like it a lot because it gives you the ability to strip out the audio of the video if you want to do that. So that's fantastic if you want to, if there's a piece of music on YouTube or a music video on YouTube that you want to get access to, you can just strip that out. But it also allows you to select the quality of your download. So if it's a 4K video on YouTube, you can select it. Okay, well, I don't need the 4K version. I want the version in 1080p, 60 frames a second. And you can grab it. So it's a great piece of software. And the paid for version, which is just a couple of bucks, gives you some additional advanced features. So well worth checking out if you've ever wanted to download a video off YouTube. Rechot, are you back in the call?
Yes, I had probably an internet. Somebody tried to cut the cable somewhere. They were listening to our call and decided we cannot speak anymore.
What did you say?
No, that's acting fun.
While you were offline, I just did my pick, which is 4K Video Downloader, which is a fantastic way of ripping video and audio off of YouTube. It's the best app of that caliber that I've come across.
Is it a plug-in to a web browser?
No, it's a separate.
Or is it a standalone application?
Okay. There may be a plugin as well. I haven't checked, but I'm certainly running. It's very nice. It's a Windows app, and there may be a Mac OS version. But you simply copy the YouTube video, and you hit a button, and it pastes it automatically into 4K Video Downloader, and then you can select what quality you want to download at, and you can also strip out the audio, which is really nice.
Nice.
And Rechot, you've rejoined us just in time to do the quiz and wrap up the show. Let me do the first question in this week's quiz. MTN listed on the Nigerian Stock Exchange this past week, and its shares rose by the maximum allowable amount in its first 2 days as a public company in Lagos. How much was that amount per day? And that was 10%.
The second question, the Competition Commission has recommended that the plan by Naspers to buy car wholesaler WeBuyCars be blocked. How much has Naspers offered to pay for 60% of the company? And the answer is 1.4 billion rand.
And Lenovo showed off something quite unusual in the world of PCs this week. What was it? And that's the world's first foldable laptop computer. Have you seen the video, Rechot?
Yeah, this thing that, you know, now there's a case study for good foldable tech, right?
I would not buy one.
No, not first generation, but again, you know, the capability of having a large screen device with that capability, I think.
Yeah.
There's definitely some potential.
The different form factors, though. I mean, this one you fold out and you use a software keyboard on a portion of the screen, which I don't think makes a huge amount of sense to me. I think it would make more sense to have some sort of foldable screen that you can open up wide. Rather than the actual computer itself being folded.
Like a roll-up screen. There's been actually some demos where they have rolled up kind of just the part of the screen, and the tech obviously allows you to do it. I think they just want to showcase or show us something that we're used to.
Yeah.
Perhaps that.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to us being on OBS hopefully from next week, because that software is going to allow me to press a little button here, and we'll be able to watch the demo video of that.
That's going to be good. Laptop,
which is going to bring a great deal of more interactivity to this podcast. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Okay, then the fourth question. Hewlett Packard Enterprise said this week it was buying which legendary maker of supercomputers, and the answer is Cray. I didn't know that they were this thing still.
They're still around and still doing big business with the U.S. government, apparently. They just won some huge $60 million deal to provide a supercomputer to, I think, the Department of Defense or one of those. But yeah, I also hadn't heard of them in ages before this announcement came out this week. And the last question in the quiz this week, Tesla CEO Elon Musk warned this week that the company will run out of money unless hardcore changes are made soon. And we wanted to know how long he gave a timeline for, and that was 10 months. 10 months until Mr. Musk runs out of cash.
Is it running out of cash, or is it running out of cash? You know, it's like, oh, maybe we need to.
Who knows? Who knows? He's a real live wire, Mr. Musk. I don't know. This apparently was in a communication to staff. At least he didn't put it out on Twitter, in which case it'd probably be subject of another SEC inquiry. And that's our show this week. As always, any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. info@techcentral.co.za. We do have a WhatsApp line, the number of which I've actually forgotten. I think it's 071-999-1111.
Yeah,
071-999-1111. I need to check that phone to see what if there are any messages there. Apologies if I haven't got back to you.
At least we know the FBI and CIA has probably already read those messages. So. Yeah. Nothing too bad to worry about, because we would have known about it, right?
Probably deleted them too.
we wouldn't know.
We would never know. But that's our show this week. Do join us at 1 p.m. on Sundays, now on YouTube. Join us in the live in the chat room. And thanks to everyone who joined us today and for the insightful comments. And hopefully we'll be back next Sunday in OBS. No pressure, Rachat. We're going to have to get this one right. Until then, from Rechad and myself, take care and cheers.
Ciao, ciao.